Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution, with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is the Truth Zone, and we got a hot one today, baby. Happy Friday. Here comes the weekend, and man, do we've got some stuff on the plate. I want to start off with this Muslim moment brought to you by thereligionofpeace.com/attacks. Let's run through a few, shall we? Yesterday happens to be in Salamea, Syria. 52 people killed. A horrible assault by the Islamic State on several Shiite towns leave over 50 dead, including women and children, who were delimbed, or as we say in the States, dismembered and beheaded. There's your religion of peace, sports fans. On May 17th, we had Jalalabad, Afghanistan, 6 killed, 16 injured. 5 employees and a guard are murdered during a suicide assault on a TV station by the Religion of Peace proponents. Also on the 16th, Kanuga, Nigeria, 2 killed, 6 injured. 3 female suicide bombers killed 2 sleeping brothers at a refugee camp. And as I said the other day, you know, they took May 15th off. I guess they were tired because there were 3 attacks in Mali, Syria, and Afghanistan that left 10 people dead. So they were very busy on the 14th. Take a day off on the 15th. Ramp up on the 16th, 17th, and 18th. And we'll see what we get today. So that's your Muslim moment. So yesterday we talked about the impact on not just illegal immigration, but legal immigration on its own. And I'd like to continue with that. It's going to be part 2. This man is a genius. It's by the Immigration by the Numbers, USA.com. And he uses a gumball machine to illustrate the overflowing of immigration in the 21st century and how it actually creates more world poverty than takes away. So let's listen to part 2.
We will be looking at a future that looks like this. As you can see, the numbers go completely off the charts. The Census Bureau tells us that this will be our future if immigration continues at today's rates. And this is what we're bequeathing to our children and our grandchildren by the middle of the next century. This is not conjecture, this is not subjective, this is not what might be, this is what will be if Congress refuses to lower immigration to something like a traditional level. If at this level of population, 40% of the lakes and streams in this country still are not fishable and swimmable, what are we going to do here, there, all the way up there? If Americans are beginning to fight over the opportunity to be in parks, on beaches, the national parks are being loved to death at this population in the country, what happens up here? If we are not keeping up with the education of our urban school children at this level, If we cannot build schools fast enough now, if so many Americans are feeling that the congestion and the tearing of the social fabric is moving beyond acceptability at this level, what is our hope moving on up? Now, you may live in a community that's little affected by immigration, but believe me, if this growth happens, there isn't a community in America that is assured of escaping the ravages that's now hitting California. And we must make decisions now for our children's and our grandchildren's future. If we allow this to happen, that future will be foreclosed. Now, what can we do? It's very simple. Congress merely has to lower the number back to where it was in 1965, back to the golden era of immigration, below 200,000.
I want to jump right in there. Did you see the year he mentioned? 1965? 1965 was a big deal because Senator Edward Kennedy, who arguably was the worst of the Kennedy politicians, he created and had passed the Immigration Act of 1965. And Bob Grant, who really, to me, started the present-day alt-right talk show media, he was pre-Rush Limbaugh, the whole thing. And this man started in the 60s and 70s. And he talked often about the Immigration Act of 1965. Basically, what that did was that it made it a hell of a lot easier for people from the Southern Hemisphere, all the way around the globe, Africa, Asia, South America, made it easier for them to come into the United States, and it made it more difficult for, yes, the white Europeans to come in. Because, you see, this was a plan, folks. This was a plan to reduce. And look, you say, you know, say it's a conspiracy, but it's a way to reduce the white population. And you're seeing that now globally. And I'm going to talk about this later on, as I mentioned yesterday, about we're headed for a severe depopulation crisis. And when I go over the demographics, you're going to see that there is a certain demographic that is exploding in the numbers, birth rate numbers, as opposed to the sharp decrease in another. So 1965 was a really big deal because that Immigration Act that Senator Ted Kennedy pushed through has caused severe damage to this country. Let's continue.
Now, what would that look like? Well, it would not end the growth. I can tell you that. The Census Bureau says that if we were to lower immigration from the more than a million of today to a zero net level, which would be about 200,000, we would immediately slow the pace of growth and get some relief. The real improvement, though, would come for our grandchildren, who would see a stabilizing of the population by around 2050. The wonderful thing is that we are not way up there at almost 400 million in 2050, headed to 500 million. The bad news for us is that if you have lived in an area of high growth and you know all of the urban sprawl, all of the lost farmland, all of the drained wetlands, lost habitat, the loss of biodiversity that we've had in the last 25 years, we are going to have all of that again before we finally peak in 2050. But that's probably, I'm afraid, the best we can do. Every year we delay, the peak will be higher. There are some Americans who have very sincere feelings that we have to bring in immigrants in order to show our concern for the third world. Is immigration an effective tool? In this illustration, I use this gumball as representing about 1 million people. Now, 1 million people is about what we take in a year in immigrants. This is not a small number because, remember, this one gumball worth of immigration is driving every bit of this red. And each year, in our magnanimity, we try to rescue about this number from third world poverty. But how many people in the world are equally deserving of this kind of humanitarian concern on our part? Well, you got to have some kind of benchmark, and I use Mexico. 25% of the immigrants in the 1980s came from Mexico. Depending on the value of the peso at the time, the average Mexican makes about one-tenth the amount of money that the average American makes. That's poor. I would say that's deserving of our compassion. But how many people in the world are more impoverished than the average Mexican? And the answer is 4,600 million people. 4.6 billion people in the world are more impoverished than the average Mexican. If immigration is a policy to help the people of the third world, I want you to watch very closely. Don't miss this, because I want you to watch to see how much the third world changes each year when we take the million people out of it. You see, there can never be any hope for the people in the third world except here where they live. Most of these people, 99-point-whatever percent of these people can never leave. They're stuck where they are. They have to bloom where they're planted. If we care about these people, we have to figure out ways to help them here. Because we can do this kind of...
And I just want to say this. He's right that you have to help them where they are. Now, these people are so impoverished because of their despotic governments. And we, the United States, through our foreign aid programs, continue to fund these despotic rulers all over the world, and they exploit their people, they hoard their natural resources, the state owns everything, and well, you know what happens when government owns something, they ruin. They ruin an industry, they ruin a resource, we see this here in our own country. So the problem, you know, Africa, you take Africa, they are rich in natural resources. And between the exploitation, and I'm not going to get into that, I get it, the Anglo-American, you know, alliance thingy, but, you know, you can also say that Africa was doing a lot better when France was in there, Italy was in there, England was in there, and after they left, you know, and they left the Africans to their own devices, it really hasn't worked out too well. So that's the problem. And I think the first step to not support these despotic rulers, number one, and yeah, it'll hurt at first more, but you have to cut off the funding. You have to take away the lifestyles of these rulers. And, you know, like the media likes to push certain agendas, our media can push worldwide, and the BBC and all that can push how badly these people are being exploited to stir global opinion and to stir global condemnation of these rulers and basically pressure them to step down, allow free and open elections, make these countries more democratic, and basically sweep out the garbage. But we don't do that. So certainly to me, that's one of the ways that we have to make this a mainstream discussion. And we have to bring this to the world table via our social media accounts. So let's continue on. There's 3 minutes left.
A thing forever, but we won't make any difference in the world. There are many ways that Americans can help third world nations, but immigration is not one of them. And let's look at another issue here. That's the issue of the safety valve. Since the 1950s, people have been talking about how the United States has to take the overpopulation of Latin American countries, lest those countries blow up. Can that work? Well, no, it can't. Let me show you why. The fact is that last year, we took about 1 million people. But last year, the third world added, births over deaths, another 80 million people into the impoverished persons of the world. And this year, we'll take 1 million people, And this year, the third will add more than 80 million more people. And next year, if the U.S. government insists on bringing this exorbitant, non-traditional level of immigration and brings another 1 million people, these people will still add another more than 80 million people into the impoverished numbers of the world. There's no way that we can ever get ahead of this. We cannot be a safety valve. We could take millions a year, totally destroy the social fabric of this country, totally destroy the environmental resources, ruin any possibility of the lower skilled people in this country having any kind of a decent standard of living. We still would not get ahead of this. If we want to help the third world, immigration is meaningless. The most important thing we can do is answer the requests of third world nations that have been begging us for years to help them with family planning assistance. We have been enriched by so many immigrants who have brought tremendous skills into this country, and we're thankful for those. The question is, though, should we continue to drain off large numbers of skilled professional people from the other countries? Because you see, 25% of the people who come in this country are the people who could be the great agronomists, engineers, teachers, public health people, public administrators, who perhaps could do something here. If I were a person in some of those countries and had a chance to move here instead of staying here, I have no idea what I would do. This is not a moral judgment on the people who come here. It's a moral judgment on us and asking the question, do we continue to drain the most professional, brightest people from the rest of the world? Do we continue to drain the change agents? The time to act is now. Americans must...
See, that's the point, right? And we are draining, we are taking away the best of those people. And something that he didn't touch on, that this report that I talked about yesterday, the fiscal burden of illegals at fairus.org. So this report examines the likely consequences if amnesty for the illegal alien populations were adopted, similar to the one under Ronald Reagan in 1986, for those of you Reagan lovers. The report notes that while tax collections from the illegal alien population would likely increase only marginally, because they also don't really make any money, that audio clip talked about lower wage earners, and as I had stated, we have created an indentured slave class with these people, with the multiculturalism, not encouraging to learn English, not encouraging to learn the American way of life. We've created a slave class. So the new legal status also would make them eligible for receiving Social Security retirement benefits, which is already bankrupt. So, you know, why don't you people, like, take that into consideration? Already, and also, it's, look, the account, the Social Security account has been pilfered since day one. Money has been, Peter has been robbed to pay Paul. We know that. But then you add on all these other people and make them eligible for Social Security and also Medicare. Do the math, folks. The money and the resources just aren't there. I mean, that's just the end of the story. So, this can't be done. Real quick, and then I'm going to go into Comey. I know you're dying. BeckersHospitalReview.com talks about 10 states with the most illegal immigrants and the impact on healthcare spending, right? We talk about that being a problem. And you wonder why your rates are so high. Because the bill for these people not paying and receiving, you know, quote-unquote, free healthcare, it gets passed on to you. The concentration of illegal immigration populations in certain regions and states poses a set of complex issues for healthcare policymakers. Below are the 10 states with the largest percentages of illegal immigration populations. Number one, predictably, is California. 2.82, and this article, when was this article? 3 years, almost 3 years ago. 2.82 million illegal immigrants and residents, comprising 25% of the illegal population in the entire United States. Followed by Texas, 16%, Florida, 6%, New York, 5%, Illinois, 5%, Jersey, Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona, and Washington State, bringing in 2%. There are approximately 3.11 million additional so-called undocumented immigrants across the 40 states, which is putting a severe economic burden to this country. So, and not even talking about the illegal immigration. The legal immigration, the saturation, is no good. And people like to use the argument, well, the Statue of Liberty says bring us your tired and your poor and your blah, blah, blah. Right, well, that was the 19th century. America is no longer in the 19th century. We don't have any more frontier land, right? Every piece of land, every inch of it, on the continental United States especially, well, the entire United States, period, is owned. Either the government owns it, a bank owns it, a commercial real estate agency owns it, or private citizens own it. There's no more open frontier land to squat on and create a ranch or a farm. So I love how these liberals talk about, you know, the 19th century, we're a nation of immigrants. Right. But we're not in the 19th century landscape anymore. So let's go to James Comey. Now, I'm going to give you my Skype number. If you wish to call in, we have 20 minutes left, so I'll probably funnel over into Monday because I got a long clip here. It's really good. Area code 469-277-2275. So, let's go to James Comey. This guy is in unbelievable hot water. And this audio clip compilation comes from Infowars.com, The Alex Jones Show, and I strongly recommend that you watch or listen to him. And he's on a 24-hour loop, like all others, on the internet. And he's live 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. on Sundays. And, James Comey, you, sir, are in the hot seat. And President Trump and AG Jeff Sessions, they have to make an example of this man. They have to. They cannot let him off. The man has at least committed perjury. He at least has committed fraud with this alleged memo. He has at least created obstruction of justice. The man has to be arrested and tried. There's no exceptions. Now, in my opinion, Donald Trump dropped the ball when he tried to be nice when he was elected and said, oh, I'm not going to go after Hillary. You know, the Clintons really are not bad people. Wrong. Wrong, wrong. See, and I know what he tried to do. He tried to apply his principles of the art of the deal that made him so successful as a business person, but he tried to apply that as president of the United States. And what he did was he underestimated the establishment. He thought that they were just like, you know, the business sharks that he's dealt with for 40, 50 years. Well, Mr. President, you're wrong. These people are not sharks. They're vampires. Okay? Vampires. Now, obviously, I mean that metaphorically. You cannot compromise and be nice. He did this in his own family, and he's being screwed. Has anybody noticed how vocal and how active Donald Jr. and Eric were on the mainstream media outlets during the campaign and on Twitter? And Ivanka was there, but not as much as his two boys. He gets elected, and all of a sudden, Donnie and Eric are no longer as vocal. Now, that could be, well, you know, they're running his business. Well, he should have given Ivanka a job, too. Because her and her husband have been more vocal to Donald's detriment than his sons ever were, of course. And I know why he did that, because Ivanka's a moderate, no, she's a liberal, and her husband's even worse. And they're stabbing him in the back, which is why he went with Vince Priebus, tried to play nice with Paul Ryan. Sorry, Mr. President, you gaffed. And now you've got to be hardcore at this point. And you got to go after James Comey, and you got to go after Schmuck Schumer, and that senile old bat Maxine Waters, and Frankensteiner, and on and on and on. Al Green, whoever has demanded for you to be impeached, and when these investigations are over, and you're going to be cleared, you're going to have to make arrests, and you're going to have to remove these people. And that's just the bottom line, sir. You're going to have to play hardcore baseball. So let's go to this clip.
So if the Attorney General or senior officials at the Department of Justice opposes a specific investigation, can they halt that FBI investigation?
In theory, yes.
Has it happened?
Not in my experience, because it would be a big deal to tell the FBI to stop doing something that, without an appropriate purpose. I mean, we're oftentimes, they give us opinions that we don't see a case there, and so you ought to stop investing resources in it. But I'm talking about a situation where we were told to stop something for a political reason. That would be a very big deal. It's not happened in my experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the biggest news in the last year of mainstream media propaganda with no proof that Donald Trump is a Russian agent. This is incredible. More and more Democrats like Dennis Kucinich, who are actually respectable, I don't agree with their politics, but they're not evil people, have come out and said the deep state is trying to take Trump out. Colonel Schaefer has said it. Jonathan Turley, a constitutional lawyer and big Democrat, big liberal, is saying this is totally criminal. This is dangerous. Even if you believe Comey's supposed memo, this is not obstruction of justice. What is obstruction of justice is what Comey's done. That's the big breaking news. Any way you look at what I'm about to break here, this has been blurbed a few times online. It's got no attention. One of our producers, Matt, brought it to my attention. It is incredible. We've been scrambling this morning just looking at this over and over again and looking at the dates. This is incontrovertible. This is open and shut on Comey. Either the memo's fake and whoever released it from the FBI is lying, or the media's lying and it doesn't exist and the FBI hasn't come out and said that that's a lie and the FBI is letting this fake leak come out with totally made up bogus info. That wouldn't be the first time. It's happened multiple times.
Just want to stop Alex right there. And see, this puts Chuck Schumer in the hot seat because he's been shooting his mouth off that Comey did, and he's aware that Comey did keep the memo, and he's very meticulous and he's very accurate. And so Chuck Schumer, you too, my friend, you're open to fraud, you're open to sedition, and you, sir, just be thankful that I'm not the president, because you would be in shackles, brother. You can bet your bottom dollar.
Just this week so far, with the whole Russia intel claim that wasn't true about laptop bombs. So listen to me carefully. Here's the big news. James Comey, I'm going to play the clip in a moment. In the Senate Judiciary Committee on May 3rd, that's months after the supposed February meeting with the president and the February phone calls where they had just dismissed Flynn. And he said, reportedly, gee, I hope you can see your way to not keep this going. Trump says he never said that. And Trump said, watch out, I've got tapes. And it just broke. Kit Daniels, Infowars.com, breaking. Comey caught committing perjury to Congress? Question mark. Comey's February memo contradicts May 3rd Senate testimony. And I would just say Comey's reported February memo, because he hadn't denied it. In fact, he pretty much says he's done it. He wants to testify, though, as a government agent next week, not as a citizen. I guess he wants immunity. But again, my brain is just burning with all the angles here. Let me say it very, very simply. Comey testified May 3rd to the Senate committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, that there was no outside influence and that Trump had not been trying to influence the Russia investigation and that the FBI had not been told to stand down. This is months after he reportedly meets with Trump in person and writes this memo where Trump tried to encourage him to drop any type of stuff going forward against Flynn. So, is the memo fake and the FBI leader is going along with the lie? Did he really do the memo and it's true Trump did it, but then Comey perjured himself to Congress and said he hadn't been influenced or nobody tried to influence him? Any way you slice it, they have been caught in red-handed perjury and fraud and lies. The lesser of is the FBI knows the memo's fake and doesn't exist and has let somebody put out a fake leak and let the lie go out there in an attempt to bring down the president. That's the lesser crime, and it's serious. There's so many crimes there, it makes your head spin. Or Comey did have the meeting, did do the memo, and perjured himself to Congress. Or the memo's perjury. There's no way out of this now. No way out. You're about to find out about the providence and the luck of the United States of America, because God loves children, drunks, and the United States of America. Good thing I've got all three of those covered. I'm just joking. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. But I tell you, they're going to have a lot of trouble covering this one up, and it's hiding in plain view. We're going to play you the video clip that sinks the whole lie on the other side of this break, and we've got just so much giant news. It's redonkulous. The attempts to sabotage our republic will not be met with silence. We are resisting it. We are the resistance to globalism. We are the rebirth of the republic, the rebirth of America. We are the info war. Thank you so much for joining us. Big demonstration at the FCC in DC today by Occupy the FCC.
Isn't that just awesome? Is it? Call me. Your nuts are just hanging out in the wind, brother. They're just hanging out in the wind. And you notice how he's been, like, real silent the last couple of days after this memo thing exploded. Shame on you, Mr. Comey. Shame on you. It's going to come down on you like a ton of bricks, my friend, of the likes you have never, ever seen before. And I'm going to enjoy every single minute of your downfall. And all of you scumbags in Washington, D.C. Oh, yeah, all of you that are crying for impeachment, that are buying this, that are pushing this fabricated Russian collusion crap, you're going down. And you media outlets, I mean, I tell you, you know what Donald Trump should do? You know what Donald Trump should do? He should resurrect John Adams' acts of sedition. You know that? And he should just round everybody up. Mass arrests. When this special prosecution crap, which, you know, people have asked on Facebook, and I agree, how come we didn't have a special prosecutor into Obama for 8 years? How about Fast and Furious? How about Benghazi? How about running guns to the so-called Syrian rebels, which now we know is ISIS? How about the hot mic incident? I mean, this is funny. Russian stuff, right? How about the hot mic incident where Obama is caught talking to some Russian ambassador? Yeah, go tell Vladimir that I'll have more flexibility after my last election. How about that one? How about that one? Right on a hot mic. Right out in the open. He's telling the Russian ambassador, go tell the Russian president, I'm going to have more flexibility after this election. Yeah, you know why? Because, right, there are no more elections for him. So he could tell the American people to go F yourselves, which, I mean, he did in his first term. You people just didn't catch on. See, I caught on. I knew he was going to do that, but you didn't catch on right away. See, he can go tell the Russian ambassador, I'll have more flexibility, I'll be able to do more stuff, you know, that I want to do, regardless of the law, regardless of the American people, and you go tell Vlad, after I win, and this is my last one, I'll just be able to do more stuff. I'll be able to hang with you. Where's the special investigation? Where's the trial? Zero. Zero. See, and this is why I said the United States of America, the federal government, is an absolute default. It's an absolute rebellion. It has absolutely disqualified itself from receiving our money, from receiving our support, and they have forfeited their right to dictate the direction of this country, which, you know, you libertarians out there that call yourself libertarians, and you so-called constitutionalists, and you badass rebels who say, well, I'm out of the system, they're not running me. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. Believe me, they're running you. They're running you because either you're being taxed to death and paying for this stuff like I am, or you're living off the grid like a barbarian, okay? You're basically living by candlelight. You have to catch rainwater. You have to live like a caveman. You're not living, I mean, come on. And then you're going to give me, well, I'm not a materialist. No, you can't be a materialist, you see. Because if you were able to, let's say, live, you know, as they say, high on the hog, off the grid, you're going to get spotlighted. You're going to get targeted. And believe me, like what has happened over the years of California, they're just going to take whatever land and take whatever off the grid home you got, and they're going to crush it. Okay? They'll find a way. You violated some regulation here. You didn't have a permit for over there. And they will get you. So they are dictating your life. You just want to play the game and be in denial and say, well, you know, you beat the system. No, you didn't. You didn't beat the system. Okay? The system can only be beaten when the laws get changed. And as Thomas Jefferson said, if there comes a time and it becomes a circumstance, the American people have the right to either force change within the present system or change the system entirely. Yes, we on paper have that right, but as you know, you try doing something by yourself or in a small number, the Bundys, you get squashed like a bug. So we as a people have to come to grips with the fact that this government has gone all out naked rogue. See, they've been doing it under the table. Now, some people will argue, Some people will say it started in the 1960s with the Communist Manifesto, as I pointed out in one of my earlier podcasts. Some will say it started in 1933 under FDR with all the welfare and social programs. Some will say it was in 1913 with the Federal Reserve and the permanent federal income tax that we have now. Some people will go as far back as 1868 with the 14th Amendment. Well, all of that is open for speculation, but it was all under cloak and dagger. It was all under a gradual process, but now I think that it's fair to say that they are now wide open and exposed, and they don't care. They don't care if you know it, because they're saying to you, what are you going to do about it? And by the way, enjoy your temporary small victory in electing Donald Trump, but we're going to destroy him right in front of your eyes. And you're going to like it. See, here's the thing. I'm hearing on other talk shows, and I don't want to mention them, because again, you know, there's legal ramifications, whatever, you know, because I know the NSA is listening and all that stuff. But certain talk shows on the internet have had guests come in, and they've said how, well, you know, this is going to wind up into a bloody civil war, which really is a rebellion. There's going to be blood in the streets. There's going to be, you know, watch out for this summer. There's going to be unprecedented riots. State and local law enforcement are getting ready. They're buying more riot gear, on and on and on and on and on and on. And that if Donald Trump is taken out, either assassinated or impeached, there's going to be a full-blown physical war on the streets. Well, here's the thing, folks. I think if the establishment gets their way, here's what I think is going to happen, which is far worse than a bloody internal war between the patriots and between Antifa and the government. And it could be summed up with one word: nothing. Nothing. See, I'm more worried about that. I'm more worried about nothing happening other than the usual bitch and moan sessions that we do on Facebook and Twitter. That's what I'm worried about. See, I'm worried about nothing happening if Trump is assassinated or impeached, or he just says, you know what, F this, I don't need this, I quit. Okay? Or if he's thrown out of office under this 25th Amendment with a vice president who I don't trust, by the way, I was hoping Sessions would have been the guy. And if enough of the two houses say that Trump is mentally unfit, and how do you judge that? How do you judge who is mentally unfit? Like, what barometer are you going to use? What are you going to make? You're going to bring up some psychiatrist in? And what's his political affiliation, right? How are you going to determine if the president is unfit? Meanwhile, Ronald Reagan was full-blown senile. Rumor has it Nancy was running the joint. He's ODing on jelly beans and astrology, okay? So you want to talk about who's unfit for what? How do you gauge that? But that's what we're gauging. So I'm worried about nothing happening. So real quick, I got a minute left. That Ramon Rojas guy or whatever that plowed through 20 people, killed one, injured 19. Has been arrested, obviously. He's been charged, I think, today with one count of murder, 19 counts of attempted. And guess what he was on, folks? Synthetic marijuana. Okay? Marijuana's bad. Okay? And that proves one of my earlier podcasts from the first week I started a few weeks ago that marijuana should not be legalized recreationally. Okay? Proves my point. So, This is Michael B. of the Hot of the Truth Zone. Have a great weekend. See you Monday. You can email me, thetruthzone27@gmail.com.